So Shree, if you could unmute yourself and tell us a little bit more about how you became a follower of Jesus and how you became Mennonite.
Well, before that, I just have to say I'm just overcome having seen Annalie and Leah. Just, you know, having known their mothers when they were pregnant with these girls. And now hearing these words from them is just awesome. Awesome is the word for that. It's just amazing. So I don't know if Annalie and Leah are even connected to this service, but I want Deb and Brenda to give them a big hug for me. Tell them I just loved it. They have made my confinement. Anyway, thanks, Rachel, for this opportunity, for asking me to join you on this. I don't know if there's a specific date or time or place when God entered into my life, but I grew up in a family of great faith. I attended a convent school from kindergarten. So I was always exposed to worship and scripture right from the time I remember. And I always also attended church, most of the time at a Catholic church, because it was a Catholic convent that I went to. But, you know, at other times when I've lived at other places, at other traditions as well. Coming to Raleigh Mennonite I look back at it as a total miracle. I came for graduate school to Raleigh in 1985. Soon thereafter, I became friend with one of my graduate students at NC State, Glenn Detweiler. And, you know, just the way he befriended people and the way he was, I asked him, where do you worship? And so he said, oh, it's a church you would probably have never heard of called Mennonites, and we do not have a church in Raleigh, far away in Durham. So that's all he said about it. And it was during those days that I actually was worshiping at Forest Hills Baptist Church, where I met John and Luz. So, you know, things are all gone in a circle in my life. And but Glenn invited me to Durham Mennonite Church, and I think it was June of 1986 when I first went, or May or June of 1986 when I first went to Durham, and then I never stopped being part of the Mennonite Church. And then I think in August we started worshiping in Raleigh, 1986. I worshiped at Raleigh Mennonite ever since then, and then I really was highly privileged, mentored by John and Marilyn Bender, who were the pastors at that time. And there are a few people here. If I remember correctly, there are only three couples right now at church there. They have been at my baptism at the Raleigh Mennonite Church. Rosine and David Rover, Brenda and Craig Erb, Janet and Todd Fields. I can't think of anybody else who is currently now at RMC who were there at that time. But I remember these three couples being part of baptismal service at Raleigh Mennonite Church. And that also happened in 1988, if I'm correct. A couple of years after I had started worshiping, because I was communicating with my parents and my grandparents about this decision to join Raleigh Mennonite. They were very concerned. They had never heard of these Mennonites. And so they thought, well, here I'm joining a cult and will never be seen again. So they dissuaded me, and I remember so distinctly John and Madeline talking to me and saying, oh, there's no hurry for you to join the church. Wow, wait till your parents and grandparents feel comfortable. And then it happened that my mother came to visit in 1988, and she worshipped at Raleigh Mennonite for a few months while that she was there in Raleigh. And I remember so well, before she left, she said, you have our blessing.
And I think one of the things, this is such a familiar passage to a lot of, but one thing that was new to me when I read it this week was I was sitting in with the first section, and I realized that Paul starts out listing all the things you might still have, even if you don't have love. And many of the things that he's listing are things I would think would be the natural fruits of love or evidence of love being there. For example, you might still be able to speak with power. You might still have prophetic wisdom. You might have a faith that can move mountains, do all kinds of things. And you might do noble and humbling things with your life. But without love, it's all empty. And as a professional in a nonprofit that tries to like operate love, for lack of a better word, like the love of donors, like Raleigh Mennonite for oceans away, the love of MCC staff for the new lands they call home, the love of partners for their community. What are some of the barriers you've seen to love within your work at MCC, even as powerful, wise, faith-filled, humbling things are happening?
Yeah, and so just to continue on a little, after I finished parts of my graduate studies at Raleigh, it was Glenn Detweiler who introduced me to the Mennonites. He had just returned, actually, from Zaire as an MCC volunteer after 3 years of being in Zaire. And so I heard of MCC through him. And I guess it was through my having been nurtured at RMC and hearing about the work of MCC and being at a crossroads of not being wanting to be supported by the tobacco industry in North Carolina to complete my PhD, I just decided, well, maybe I should just go with this. So that's how I started with MCC in 1990. And so that was a difficult time, a difficult decision to make. And, you know, some of my friends there, David and Rosine and others would remember that, you know, that, yeah, it was a turning point and deciding to go with MCC, not completing my doctoral work at NC State. So I started with MCC in Jamaica, Caribbean Islands, worked there for 4 years, and then have gone on since then. So your question is kept me thinking about what are some of the barriers. And I listed four of them. One is, you know, Bishop Romero talks about not being messiahs, but ministers. And that's a temptation that all of us face. And that is a great barrier to love, because going as outsiders into communities, there's always this temptation of thinking, oh, I think I see the problem. I think I know what the fix is. So, you know, but that comes in the way of a lot of being loving. The other one is becoming martyrs rather than followers of Christ. You know, it's very important, I think, that we have to remember that our own faith is not all done and complete, that we are constantly becoming new creation ourselves, and that God is still fully at work with us. And it is through the people who we work with and God's presence in them and through them that our faith. And so this whole temptation of martyrdom, killing ourselves, not worthwhile. It is more waiting, watching, learning, and transforming ourselves process. It's a whole process. There's no perfection that we are trying to attain in the communities where we live. It is walking together, changing each other, what it is. The third thing that came to my mind as a barrier to really practicing love is seeking more for results and impact of our work. And such seeking of impact and results and objectives and goals, and if we try to do that just for themselves, or just to follow or finish or complete a cycle that we have planned, rather than wait for God's time and God's pace. So seeking that balance of knowing what is important, what is God calling us to do, rather than this huge strategic plan, wisdom that we have created and want to follow, sometimes at the expense of showing love, being patient and waiting. And I think the last one, I would think the barrier for love, making love as an organization, as people who mean well, gone with good intent, is honoring partnership. Rather than educating people all the time, empowering people and transforming ourselves. There's a lot, I think the first song that Chris and Pam sang was so beautiful. To think that because we are resourced with education, with money, with opportunity, that we have the answer, and not being willing to receive would be a big barrier to receiving love and to giving love. So those are some things that I think I just thought of, that, as an organization, as people of good intent, being alert to them is very important.
Yeah. Thank you, Sri. And I've also, another thing that kind of struck me a new way this week was the middle section, which focuses on what love is like, sort of love's character. I've always thought of that as about being about love between two people. So my parents got that cross stitched as one of their wedding gifts. One of my friends read that aloud as a prayer for us when we were in the heat of a very long and conflict. And it is about love between two people, of course, but it's also about God's love for us. And so I'm wondering how you've been able to cultivate an awareness of God's love for you in so many different challenging places.
Yeah, in challenging places, there certainly have been. I think some of you may remember that there was a time in my life where I used to write every day to you, every single day. When I was living in Palestine, Israel, I practically wrote every single day, very just sentences, and some of you heard from me today. Because I felt that I definitely needed that to share this trauma that I was feeling day to day. I guess being watchful and alert are two ways that I really depend on to grasp, or at least grasp in some ways, God's love for me. And this confinement period, right now I'm talking to your guys from France. I'm in a part of France which is in the red zone still. This was the part of France that was first struck by COVID-19. And there is still risk, they say, of totally opening up part of the country. So many restrictions have come open. So this confinement period of 9 weeks for us, which is quite strict, just to even leave my apartment, I needed to have a permit. I need to always carry a permit. Had stopped 3 or 4 times by the police to check my permit. So this confinement period has definitely provided me the space and the time in which to somehow get away from being busy and reflect on how God has walked ahead of me all these years. I mean, sometimes not sometimes, many times I have stopped and thought, oh my goodness, I didn't know this was going to come my way, but God knew. And God had already found ways to care for me. And that is very evident way of realizing God's love for me. But my personal challenge is not to define God's love solely on what I receive or how blessed I am or how well I am provided for. I try to stop myself when I am thanking God to list all the wonderful things that are happening to me. Thank you, God. I think the challenge is to remain in the assurance that God is present at all times. And especially now during this confinement and this uncertainty for us, a lot of changes in Mennonite Central Committee, the organization. Many positions being eliminated, terminated, many country programs being closed, many changes to personnel. There's a lot of uncertainty. To stay centered that God love for me or for those who are affected by this in ways that are not most suitable to them right now, still present. And God is walking ahead of me and them. And God's love prevails and sustains. So I think there is so much to learn about God's love. It's deeper than the ocean, wider than the sky, and kind of that song. It's only when we open ourselves to it that we realize God's love. I can't hear you. Are you muted?
I had a window blocking the button to unmute myself, so thank you for your patience. One last question. In the last section, Paul talks about love's endurance and completeness. And in the end, Paul says, love is all there is. Love makes everything else clear, like a foggy mirror being made visible. And I'm wondering, how do you ground your work not only in faith and endurance, not only in faith and hope, which are things that gifts that I think help me to have a forward orientation, but how do you think about love as being part of the forward orientation of your work?
Again, remembering as often as possible, daily, that every opportunity we have to engage, every opportunity that I receive to engage with people, whoever they are, is a gift. And sometimes that gift is pleasant and sometimes it's not. But it still is a gift. I try to check on my personal and the organizational motivation to engage. And that is that I find is important because that then reveals to me how limited my understanding is and how important it is for me to expand it, view it from God's eyes. So motivation is important. Often I have to remind myself that everybody is made in the image of God. And everybody is equally valued and loved by God. So when I have a hard time sometimes in engaging with people or with communities or with leaders, I just have to pull myself and say, look at this person as God looks at them, not like how you are choosing to them or understand them or hear them. Then again, like I said earlier, not allowing my goals and objectives to run over what the immediate need and what they say is needed, required, just because that doesn't fall into my plan, not neglecting it, but actually being willing to change my plan because what I hear and what I see more important to the people. So listening to them, listening to the people that I am with, what helps to put love into practice.
Thank you, Sri, for your work and for your words and presence among us today. We are grateful.
Thank you.